Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Most of us are familiar with the stories of the founding of St. Louis, especially since observing the 250th anniversary of that event just 2 years ago. The exploits of Pierre Laclede and Auguste Choteau in establishing the riverfront settlement in 1764 were widely celebrated. However, some painstaking historical detective work by two university professors is now casting doubt on that history. Joining me now are Professor Carl Eckberg, Professor Emeritus of History at Illinois State University. Sharon Person is a Professor of English at St. Louis Community College. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thanks.
Thank you, Don.
This should be fun.
This will be fun.
This is, I guess, revisionist is one word that we can use. But Carl, let me begin with you. Why is the founding history, in your mind, suspect, as we know it, founding history as we know it?
Well, Don, when we started working on this subject of early history of St. Louis, we had no idea what we were going to come up with. So we had a very simple methodology. We decided to read everything available in English, French, and Spanish between 1760 and 1770. And so we started with that premise. We're going to read source materials only. We weren't going to read the Choteau Journal. We were going to read only things written at the time. And slowly, as we did this, we started peeling back the onion. And the story conveyed by Choteau in his journal just became increasingly incredible and not viable if you're using a serious professional standards for doing history.
You say Choteau and I say Choteau. I guess we'll never tomato and tomato kind of thing.
Right.
But
It is right.
Well, Sharon, let me turn to you. I'm gathering from what of your material that I've read that history has been very, very dependent on the Choteau Journal.
That's right. When Carl and I started working together, he emailed me and said, I've got this census from St. Louis in 1766. Are you interested in working on it? And I said, you bet, sure. And in order to flesh out who was here in 1766, in order to reconstruct the census, I ended up reading, I would say, probably 1,000 documents from the time, going back into the 1720s, 1730s on the other side of the river in Kaskaskia, Fort Deschartres, and the, as it was called, Illinois Country Villages. And so by looking at all of these documents, getting to know these people, trying to adhere to the strictest standards of genealogy, which says note your sources, by the time I got to St. Louis in the 1760s, I felt like I knew these people very well. And so being immersed for about 2 years in all these documents and then coming back to Choteau's journal, I said, this doesn't tell me anything. It's not helpful in the least. It's a 19th century document, but it doesn't really tell me anything about the people that I need to know about in order to talk about the census.
Well, actually, his journal was written some 50 years or so after the founding date of 1764. Does that stand? I mean, can we say it was founded in 1764?
Carl, go ahead.
Donna, I have to tell you a quick story here. As we were finishing our book here a couple of years ago, and had decided that founding wasn't the right word, we did a search and destroy for all words like founding and founders in the text, because it just didn't work that way. There was a slow emergence of a community that had gone on for years. And so when we're raising the question, can Pierre Laclede be called the founder, we're not replacing him with anyone. We're saying that there was a gradual emergence as the community arose with settlers coming over from the other side of the river. So we want to get away from founders and founding.
Well, I have here, and again, I'll probably be skipping around a little bit. I hope I don't confuse folks. The French authorized a mercantile company established a trading post in St. Louis. What was it called then, 1764, according to Choteau's writings. So that's why 1764 is kind of pinpointed as a date for, quote, the founding.
The only document that has been found that mentions this trade agreement is dated August 1763. It was for Pierre Laclede to establish a trading post in the Illinois country. And the Illinois country was both sides of the Mississippi River. Carl, you can take it from there.
Yeah, right. The French authorized this. There was some sort of a verbal agreement made in New Orleans, apparently. No written document about that before they left New Orleans. In March of 1764, the French commandant on the other side of the river at Fort Duchart said that this is March 64, that Pierre Laclede had come into his office and said that he intended to establish an outpost on the other side of the river. The commandant said, as far as I'm concerned, you can go ahead and do that. These were all verbal agreements. But in all of the documents we've read of French sources, Laclede's name appears very, 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 very rarely, and Chouteau's name even more rarely. And so when you read all of the French administrative correspondence and these guys don't appear, you begin to wonder about who was authorizing what, you know?
Sharon, going back to the census, again, from what I've read of your writings, Laclede wasn't mentioned in the census documents until 1766.
Well, 1766 was the first census. I want to say that it's an endpoint. It shows how the village had evolved up to that point. And so it's not like folks were just there a month or so beforehand and then they, you know, walked in to be counted. So as folks moved little by little, family names in particular, and some of the widows were named as heads of households in that census. But it was an end point, and we don't know what the starting point was.
Is it fair to say that Chouteau's memory had dimmed the 50 years after 1764 when he was writing his journal?
We would not be the first ones to say that.
Well, let me read what you do say.
Okay.
Chouteau's narrative is riddled with errors. Moreover, it was fabricated by a person who had a personal stake in construing history to cast a favorable light on himself and on his mentor, Pierre Laclede, all designed to work for their greater glory. It's an exercise of the imagination.
Holy cow, that's strong stuff, Don. Who wrote that?
Well, there you are.
Right. We would stick with that. My memory is certainly dimmed over the last 40 years. But there is also, in addition to the dimming of the memory, there is clearly an attempt to aggrandize his own role, that is to say, Auguste Chouteau's role, and his stepfather, Pierre Laclede. There's no doubt about that. And it's also conceivable, more than conceivable, quite likely that Chouteau wrote his journal to buttress his land claims. Because if you compare the journal to his testimony to the land commissioner, it's amazing the similarity of language. So this is not a disinterested, objective document. There are things going on there, as well as a dimming memory.
When was St. Louis named St. Louis? I think the conventional wisdom is that Laclede named it St. Louis.
All nonsense.
Again, going back to actual documents where it appears, the first time that the name St. Louis appears is in July 1765 in a land transaction. That was it's in the archives on the east side of the river.
So we're a year early in celebrating the
250th
anniversary.
Well, we don't know.
No, there was a community here. There was a community here in 1764. There was likely a community here in 1763, likely one here in 1762.
What were they calling it, do you think? Or do we know?
They were calling it the place on the other side of the river.
The encampment or whatever on the other side of the river.
That's exactly what the commandant wrote in March 1764, you know, a document from that time, you know, we have the original document that Pierre Laclede wants to establish a trading outpost on the other side of the river. That's it.
I want to bring another character into the story here, someone I must confess that I've never heard of, and that was the merchant Gilbert Maxent. Is that correct or close to pronunciation? Mm. He wrote a history in 1769, little mention of Laclede or Choteau.
Correct.
None. Zero.
So that tells us that they weren't around, that he didn't know them.
No. They were around, and he knew them. He just wanted to aggrandize his own role.
What is it with these guys?
That's what people do. That's what people do.
So go ahead, Sharon.
Well, I believe they were shrewd politicians, although I cannot profess to understand politics then or now very well. Pierre Laclede, as we have said, talked a good game. But Maxent was the big player in New Orleans, and he had agreements and contracts with many different people. And his agreement with Pierre Laclede and Lady, whose first name I don't remember, was just one among many. And I think that when this trading venture proved too risky, looked like it was going to be unprofitable, Maxent wanted out. And so in 1769, that partnership was dissolved.
So they were partners in New Orleans before Laclede came up the river.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, so what do we do now? Do we start taking down the street signs and Laclede's landing becomes something else?
Oh, no. Yeah. Laclede was here. Yeah. He's an interesting guy. He's a man of some importance. He was a faithful consort to Madame Chouteau. He was a good father to their children. He was physically courageous, brave. He's worth knowing about. He's worth studying. He has all kinds of assets and virtues. He made friends easily. He was sociable. He was a close friend of the first commandant, Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive, and was an executor of his will. He's a man of some importance. But to call him founder misconstrues his role and misconstrues the history of St. Louis, and indeed misconstrues the history of the entire region, because St. Louis emerged out of the region. It wasn't founded at a particular moment by a Frenchman coming from New Orleans.
That's an important part of your story, the fact that, yeah, that no city really, there is not a moment in time when suddenly decreed that it has become a city.
Yeah. I mean, there's Jamestown, I guess, you know, and so there's this, you know, and we have our founding fathers. And so in the 1920s, it was decided St. Louis needed a founding father. And so the statue goes up. The statue should remain. It just should be relabeled. Interesting early settler in St. Louis.
And St. Louis, not the place on the other side of the river.
Right? The other side.
We'll continue to call it St. Louis.
De l'autre côté du fleuve.
That's the other side of the river.
That's the line.
Okay. Right. Well, I hope the translation is something we can say on the radio. Thank
you.
Thank you. We'll take a break. We have to do that now. We're talking about the early history of St. Louis and how a lot of historical detective work is telling us that it may not be exactly as we have learned it over all these years. My guest in studio, historian Carl Ekberg, professor emeritus at Illinois State University, and Professor Sharon Person of St. Louis Community College. Welcome back. Continue the conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer a tweet, send it to STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with historian Carl Ekberg and Professor Sharon Person. Okay, when was St. Louis named St. Louis then?
We don't know. And I realize that's frustrating. We come in here and we say there's a lot that we don't know. I wish we could reframe it and look at everything that we do know. We do know when the first written document in St. Louis occurred in January 1766. We do know when the first baptism occurred. We do know when the first marriage occurred. There are written records for all of these
including things. Including the words St. Louis as the name of this place?
But this was by 1766, so it would have been. I can't recall the wording of these, but it wasn't a parish yet. So, I do believe the word St. Louis was used in those things. So.
Our suspicion is that it's actually named after the first commandant in St. Louis, Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive, and so that we think that it was probably named after his patron saint. When he becomes commandant in 1765, he's the man. He had been commandant across the river, de l'autre côté, before he came over here. He's by far and away the most powerful person in the region. His first name is Louis, and so there's a certain logic to that. Especially given the fact that the first appearance of the name is July 1765. So there's a certain logic to that. We're never going to know.
Give me some sense of your surprise. I mean, you weren't looking for this. You found it as you were looking through these old documents. Your sense of surprise as this story was unfolding in this way to you.
Well, it wasn't shocking. I guess what was most surprising was the tendency that's been going on for a long time to pull the history of St. Louis out of the context of the region. As Sharon and I got into it, as Sharon has been explaining, it's so obvious that St. Louis emerges out of the communities on the other side of the river. There wasn't any dramatic appearance of a Frenchman who set a flag or something. That it's the emergence over time out of the communities that already existed. And that's kind of a no-brainer, except that it was surprising when we actually discovered that in the source documents.
And Sharon, the movement to this side of the river was the result of the British influence, isn't that correct? Wasn't that British territory at some point on the east side of the river?
We believe it goes back to the French and Indian War, and in particular to the battle at Belle Famille, which is outside of Niagara. It was the summer of 1759, and the French were massacred. And there was a contingent of militia soldiers and officers from this area. Some died, some were taken prisoner. Again, there are not real good records. We perhaps have not exhausted all of our English language resources on this. But this battle was very significant. And when the survivors came back to Fort Deschartres and reported on this loss, we both feel that that's the point at which they realized the war was lost. They had just been massacred by the British and their Indian allies, and they wanted safety. And they knew the other side of the river would provide it.
Just by being on the other side of the river.
Yes. Right.
We're thinking that militiamen who survived the massacre outside of Niagara started coming over here, 1760, 1761 perhaps, and that it's a consequence of their distaste for English rule, among other things, that brought them over.
Well, let's talk for a moment about St. Genevieve. Again, looking at the writings of yours that I have read, St. Genevieve was a much more important place at this particular time, wasn't it? And is it assumed that Laclede spent more time in that particular area than here?
I believe that Laclede spent more time at Fort Deschartres than anywhere else.
Which is roughly between.
On the other side of the river.
On the other side, sure.
Between Cahokia and the village that then existed as Kaskaskia.
Yeah.
St. Genevieve was earlier, but it also had a very, it's kind of a trendy word to say, organic development where some of the French Marines who left the service received grants to go across the river and settle in St. Genevieve. And so there's a very interesting way that St. Genevieve evolved. Here I am talking about St. Genevieve, and Carl has written three books on it. and it just seems so logical, so natural that this is how it happens. So the lands were exhausted. These Marines and enterprising farmers were looking for better land, and so they went across the river little by little.
Carl, you're the St. Genevieve expert. Go ahead.
Well, in 1765, the British forces arrive in the area to take charge of the east side of the river. And at some moment in 1765, the French commandant, Louis Saint-Ange de Bellerive, decided whether to move to St. Genevieve or whether to move to the new community up here. And we don't know why, but he made a decision to send another officer to St. Genevieve, an extremely interesting guy named Rocheblave, and he came up here. And though we don't know exactly why he made that decision, it was a hugely important decision because he is the man in the area, and he decided to come up here. I have a feeling it was because of strategic reasons, the proximity to the mouth of the Missouri River. As a military man, he saw the advantages of that, whereas the farmers who moved to St. Genevieve weren't thinking in military terms, but Louis Saint-Ange was thinking in military terms. But that's only a guess.
Let's take a call or two. If folks are interested in this subject, needless to say, and as well they should be, we'll bring in Fred initially calling from Glendale. Fred, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Don.
Hi.
Would it be, I love this word you use, nonsense to say that Pierre Marquette had anything to do with the founding of St. Louis?
All right. Carl, you have kind of a stunned.
Did you mean to say Laclede? You said Marquette.
Yeah, Pierre Marquette.
Oh, Pierre Marquette, it's fair to say that he came through this area in 1673, but he had nothing to do with the founding of St. Louis.
He had nothing to do with it.
Right.
What year did you say he came through?
1673.
1673. Let me write that down. 1673.
Yeah. And make sure that his name was not Pierre. It's Pear. It's Father Marquette.
Father
right. Correct.
Marquette. Yeah. Pear Marquette.
Yeah. 1673.
Pear Marquette. Yeah.
I mean that's of some significance to know that because between 1673 and 1764. There were literally hundreds of Frenchmen who came through this area. And so the notion, we have to disabuse ourselves of the notion that somehow that when Laclede came up the river from New Orleans, this was kind of the wilderness here.
Uh-huh.
This was very, very well-trafficked area by the French for almost 100 years when Laclede came up from New Orleans.
Oh, my.
Fred, thank you so much for the call.
All right, thank you.
Let's take Sharon. Sharon's call. Go ahead, Sharon. She's in St. Louis. Go ahead.
Hi. Speaking of the farmers on l'autre côté, I was trying to remember the word for the French farm, which is very skinny and long so that neighbors could visit with each other, and I've forgotten it. So I'm hoping that either Carl or Sharon remembers that name.
Well, I'm wondering if you're thinking of the word habitation?
No.
No. There were long lots.
Yes.
Which was more frequently used in French Canada than here, though it was sometimes used here, and there was some semblance between the farm lots here and those in Canada, though there were differences as well. I thought you were thinking of habitation, because that was a word that was commonly used for farmstead.
No, there's an even better word.
Linda, that's taking us somewhat off point. We have some other calls. Try Google. That's the best.
Really quickly, the land grants use the very short word terre, T-E-R-R-E, to designate the agricultural lands.
Right. Okay, well, maybe that's a help to her. And we'll take one other call here, Linda from St. Louis. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I have read that back in the late 1700s that the Marquis de Lafayette or General Lafayette was told he had to stay on the Illinois side of the river in the old Jerome Mansion in Cahokia because there wasn't anything fine enough for him to stay in the city of St. Louis. Is this correct, or have you read about this?
That would be 1825 when he was here. I believe it was 1825, and that's Don doesn't like my use of the word, but that's also nonsense.
Oh, really?
Sure. No, there were fine houses in St. Louis in 1825, including Auguste Chouteau's house.
Okay.
So there were plenty of fine houses.
I have a note here, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. The word that we're looking for, Signuri, Signeury, is it? Well, okay, well, let's move along.
Let's move on because
I want to ask, what sort of response are you getting from your work has yet to be published in the Historical Review that comes in January.
Right.
But what kind of response are you getting from fellow historians who are totally bought into the history we're all familiar with?
Well, we don't have much feedback yet. We do know that the Missouri History Review would have sent it out for review, but those are always anonymous reviews. And so their reviewers have obviously thought that it was worth discussing. Remember now, what we're saying is this is an issue that really deserves debate without being categorical about it. And so we're hoping that it engenders debate.
I hope that it engenders more research.
More work.
Anybody's got papers in their attic? Mm-hmm. Bring them on down.
You know, it brings to my mind, and our time is beginning to wind down, but it brings to mind that history of this period and certainly before should we consider all of it suspect because of the egos of people who might have been involved? The victors always write the history and that sort of thing. I mean, history is, I guess, I'm saying the word suspect now as a result of the kind of research you've done.
Well, there is one thing that Sharon and I agree on, and that is when you go to the archives at the Missouri History Museum on Skinker and you dive into those original manuscripts written by the local folks in the 1760s, I mean, it is just an astonishing high that we get from plunging into those documents. And those documents were not written with any ulterior motives. They're the straight stuff. That's the real deal.
Is it fair to say that a lot of the history of this period then has been sloppy?
No. I spend a lot of time looking at Frederick Billen's work from the 1880s, particularly his land claims, because I think that's one of the biggest problems with the Chouteau journalists is this idea that Pierre Laclede was doling out lands. His work is very meticulous. It's very meticulous. You can follow his work. It's like checking somebody's homework. I'm a teacher. So I was checking Billen's homework, and it's wonderful, but then he chose to, underpin all of this wonderful research with the pretty much straight story from the Chouteau Journal, which there's no research to support from the time.
I've read it here. The bottom line is that too many historians bought into Chouteau's journals.
That's it's so easy to read history backwards. By 1800, Auguste Chouteau was a really, really important person. Yeah. But 40 years earlier, it's autre chose, different deal.
All right. Well, I've got to end it right there. This is fascinating stuff. And I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to the published journal that's going to – your report that's going to come out in January. Thanks to Professor and historian Carl Eckbird, Professor Sharon Person of St. Louis Community College. Great to see you here. This is fun. A reminder that they're going to be discussing Pierre Laclede, founder of St. Louis, the making and perpetuation of a myth, which is the title of what they're talking about, this Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum. That's Sunday at 1 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum. If you like this sort of thing – attend that, and you'll learn a lot more. Thank you both so much for being
with
us.
Thank you, Don.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.